Hello, and welcome to Another Moment in Creation with Diana Wedge. Today, we're talking about bulrush. Bulrush can be found in wet meadows, swamps, shallow pond edges, and muddy areas. They are also located in our very own protected wildlife and wetlands area here in Creston, British Columbia, Canada. Bulrush is the common name for several large wetland grass-like plants in the sedge family, Cyperaceae. These have solid three-sided stems, leaves that resemble long grass arranged in rows, and spikelets of hardly noticeable flowers. They grow in small clusters. Their reed-like and long, firm leaves, which are olive green, offer drooping clusters of small, often brown spikelets found near the stem tips. The tips bloom with clumps of reddish-brown or straw-colored flowers that turn into hard seed-like fruits, which aquatic animals eat. These stems are typically hollow, and they are known to grow up to 6 feet tall. They are sometimes also called cattails, but we'll talk a little more about that in a few minutes. In Ireland, they are known as black paddies. And considering these plants are in the sedge family, I thought I would throw this in here. Did you know that a flock of herons or cranes are also called a sedge? Bulrushes create excellent habitats for wild birds. According to Texas A&M AgriLife, the seeds of bulrushes are consumed by ducks and other birds, while geese, muskrats, and nutria consume the rhizomes and early shoots. Rhizomes are also called creeping rootstocks. We talked about them in episode 6 when we discussed seeds. A nutria, or coypu, is a medium-sized rodent that lives in freshwater environments. It has a rounded, hairy, and rat-like tail, which is different from the tail of the beaver, which is wide and flat. It's also different from the muskrat, which has a thin, scaly tail that is flat on the sides. Nutria are also distinguishable by their orange teeth and white whiskers. Submerged portions of all aquatic plants provide habitats for many micro and macro invertebrates. Microinvertebrates are small, microscopic life forms that reside in water, like lakes and ponds. Macroinvertebrates are animals without a backbone that can be seen with the naked eye. These bottom-dwelling animals include crustaceans and worms, but most are aquatic insects. These invertebrates, in turn, are used as food by fish and other wildlife species like amphibians, reptiles, and ducks. After aquatic plants die, such as the bulrush, their decomposition by bacteria and fungi provides food, called detritus, for many aquatic invertebrates. When fish make beds over bulrush, they sweep away the sand, exposing the roots. This dense region of roots provides excellent cover for young fish. The downside of bulrushes is that they are considered undesirable in flooded plains and meadows. This is because they rapidly take over an area and they are not often a forageable food source for larger animals. On the other hand, did you know the bulrush plant is edible for humans? These stems and shoots can be eaten raw or cooked, and the roots and unripe flowers can be boiled. Rhizomes may also be dried and pounded into flour. We'll get into a little more detail on its uses soon, but for now, let's start with something a little dirty. God's sewage system. Answers Magazine explains that God uses the river with its pebbles, bulrushes, and silt to cleanse and sustain life. Sewage engineers are still studying its unfathomable secrets. According to Drexel University, in the Mississippi Delta marshlands of the USA, the Delta bulrush has properties that can help cleanse marshes of oils, which reduces the impact of Gulf oil spills on its ecosystems. It transmits oxygen to underwater microorganisms, which are capable of decomposing oil. A green wall of emergent bulrush stems would act as an oil buffer for the rest of the wetlands. Dr. Alfred Schuller notes that bulrushes are more tolerant of oil than many other marsh plants, which suggests that the Delta bulrush will persist regardless of the oil and continue to stabilize the marshes in the Delta. Also, according to Tammy Sons, or T. Sons, a horticulturist and e-zine article contributor, bulrushes are often used in constructed wetlands to treat agricultural NPS pollution and for the creation and restoration of wetlands. One of the plants used for this kind of project is the species called the giant bulrush, or otherwise known as the restorer. It is considered a superior plant for this, particularly in the southeasterly United States. Now, you may be wondering, what is NPS pollution and where does it come from? Good question. NPS is short for non-point source pollution. This can come from coal and metal mining, photography and textile industries, as well as agricultural and urban areas. It can come from failed home septic tank drain fields, as well as municipal wastewater, stormwater, and other land-disturbing activities that detrimentally impact 30 to 50% of our waterways. An affordable and efficient means to address and clean up diverse wastewater is with constructed wetlands. Isn't it amazing that man-made messes and polluting of our waterways is no surprise to God? He already set a plan in place. This is a problem more related to modern times, and yet our living eternal God knew we would get to this point, and He made our earth so that it would clean itself. We also see renewal after fires and volcanic explosions destroy. Just think of the quick renewal of areas around Mount St. Helens. Considering that some are of the mindset that everything takes millions of years to be established, the clear evidence present within our lifetime should be an eye-opener. The Bible shares the wisdom of the water cycle. From whence the rivers come, there they return again. That's from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 7. Every time I pass by our wetlands area, I think of the God who saves and the beautiful ways He chose to cleanse His much-loved creation, including me. Did you know that the word for ark, as in Noah's ark in Hebrew, is teva, which is also the word for the bulrush basket Moses was laid in as a child and then placed in the Nile in Exodus chapter 2, verse 3? This is not the same word used for the Ark of the Testimony, or the Ark of the Covenant, by the way. Because bulrush multiplies so quickly, we do have to ask the question, how is bulrush managed? Bulrush can be cut and the rhizomes can be dug up. However, it can reestablish from seeds and remaining rhizomes. Goats are known to forage on many types of vegetation, including bulrush, so they're helpful. One danger with any chemical control method is the chance of an oxygen depletion after the treatment. This is caused by the decomposition of the dead plant material. Oxygen depletion can kill fish and other wildlife within the area. Bulrush does have its benefits, but because it is such an aggressive invader of ponds, you might want to reconsider using it, unless you are prepared for regular removal maintenance by digging up unwanted growth in your pond. What is the difference between bulrush and cattails? In my research, I have discovered that bulrush and cattail are used interchangeably. However, they are not exactly the same. T. Sons says that there are some differences between the two, although cohabitation is not unheard of. Cattails are best characterized by their large cylindrical brown spike from which it gets its name. It resembles a cat's tail as it waves in the breeze along the marshes. Cattails are known to invade wetland much faster than bulrushes, taking over large areas in a single growing season because they have mass quantities of wind-borne seeds. In growing season, cattails are also more water-dependent than bulrushes. Although they are both fast replicators, bulrushes are much slower than cattails in establishing and spreading because they reproduce primarily through underground rhizomes rather than their seeds. Another difference is that bulrushes can handle and withstand long dry periods better than cattails. They both transport oxygen from the air to their roots, which enables them to grow in continually flooded but shallow water areas. Both can tolerate poor quality water. However, bulrushes tend to grow in deeper water, where cattails prefer shallow water. God provides an excellent ecosystem with amazing properties to care for the earth He created. Bulrushes have been and are used by many cultures for medicinal purposes. In China, bulrush is used in teas and extracts. The bulrush is believed to be effective and most commonly used to stop bleeding, whether from an injury or an internal disorder. It is also used to treat painful abdominal pains in women. Evidence has shown that bulrush extracts can also reduce the amount of lipids in the blood, as well as being effective in treating colitis. Indigenous North Americans would parch the edible rhizomes, which are high in protein and very starchy, grind them into a powder for flour, mixed it with water, boiled it, and ate it as porridge. The young shoots are considered a delicacy, whether eaten in the raw form or cooked. The bulrush can be used for syrup and sugar, used in a salad, or eaten as a cooked vegetable. The syrup can be dried out to produce sugar, and the pollen can be used to make breads and cakes. They also made a poultice from the stems to stop bleeding and treat snake bites, as well as apply to the umbilical cord area of the navel on a newborn. The roots can be processed and used in treating abscesses, and some would chew the roots of the bulrush as a preventative to thirst. Let's take a moment to talk about the creative and practical use of bulrush stems. Stems have been used in weaving, and they create very strong sleeping mats, ropes, and baskets. You can make things from purses, hats, skirts, and sandals. You can even make curtains. People have been known to make temporary shelters, even canoes and rafts. Of course, they also make brooms and other household items out of them. One of the details that is sought is that the plant must grow in coarse, textured soil that is free of gravel, silt, and clay if the roots are to be used for a quality basket weaving. This root is sought after because of its black color, and it is desired as a highlight in the patterns in the making of these baskets. Poet Gil Gregorio has been inspired by the blowing bulrush. His poem reads, "Silent as they've grown in deep water's bed, seeing up above the bottom down a sedge. Their short sight shoots, its branches zooms to tame the blue sky as it blooms. Their delicate roots crawl in softly mud, where tiny fishes gathered as their habitat. They stand like twigs of those green meadows, a sight reach pole beneath in a space windows. Their bodies wind cut, knitly weaved and daubed, will surely serve like a shepherd's swampland hub. With sticky slime and pitch, they merrily glow. Oh yes, they flag in beauty at riverbank's brow." Remember when I mentioned the bulrush connection to the baby Moses? In Christianity, the bulrush symbolizes Moses. Moses' parents trusted God, and God provided for Moses and for their safety. Because of this, the bulrush symbolizes faithfulness and humility. His basket was found floating in the bulrushes by an Egyptian princess. Because Moses would become the deliverer of the Israelites, the bulrush also represents deliverance and salvation. The next time you take a stroll along a marshy path, delight in a lovely pond, or enjoy your local wetland wildlife area, consider God's promise to deliver you as well as all of mankind. God loves you. This is Diana signing off until we share another moment in creation.